Hi, Dan.
I'm Batman.
Oh, no. Hi, Batman.
Hi, Jason. Hi, Jason.
I didn't know we were doing voice. Well, hello there, Dan. I guess we could do all the voices if we...
It's Christmas, basically, right? It's a holiday episode.
It's the end of the year. We will skip next week and then be back the following week. Sorry you have a cold.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. It was an early Christmas present for my kid.
Yeah, that's nice. First Christmas.
What do you get for the dad who has everything?
A cold.
Crud, yes, is the answer.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, just think, your immune system is being savaged, but it's building his immune system, so.
As a parent now, I understand that the sacrifices we must make.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this is it. I'm throwing myself on the sword of virulence. And there we go.
Happy birthday to our friend James Thompson's P-Calc. It's 30 today. Oh, 30.
It's not
30
even
years.
Like, you know, we joke about like when it's like, oh, that app is old enough to drink or something. Like, no, this app is old enough to like have a family and maybe be thinking about retirement and... I don't even know. Considering an upcoming Senate run, maybe? I don't know. There's a lot of things this app can do.
Yeah, BB Edit turned 30 earlier this year, too. So this is the, I guess, 1992. What a time. Something like that.
I mean, that was, I think, literally, is that the year I started on the Mac? It was either that or 91. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Almost 30 years of me being a Mac user, too. So throw that out there.
Yeah, just get.
I was amused actually listening to you and Mike. I was amused listening to you and Mike on Upgrade talk about your origin stories because you are about a decade older than me. Almost exactly older than me.
Mm-hmm.
And I always think of you as like, well, I mean, you certainly got your starting computers before I did, but you didn't come to the Mac that much earlier than me. It was really only 2 or 3 years, but we came to it in very different times in our lives, obviously. So,
sure. You know. Yeah. I mean, I was an 18-year-old and you were an 8-year-old, something like that. 19-year-old and 9-year-old.
Yeah. Something
about
like
the same
that.
Time though. in the like,
well, I mean,
80s,
you know, but
90s.
We've both been using the Mac for about 30 odd years. So, you know, that's, I don't know. It's a long time and amazed me as I am at the end of every year. And you end up, you know, we do our articles looking back and looking forward. And every year I think about how old the Mac is and how well it's survived and, you know, constant amazement. Like, I don't know. Do you think the iPhone gets to 30 years? I'm not convinced it does, but it's not impossible, certainly.
Yeah, and I actually think that the lesson to be learned from James's piece about P-Calc turning 30, which is adapted from his piece about P-Calc turning 20, which it's only fair. My piece about BB Edit turning 30 was adapted from my piece about it turning 20, right? I linked to my Macworld piece about it and said, yep, 10 more years. But what struck me about it is that 30 years is so long, especially for something like a tech thing, that it lives many lives in that time, right? Like,
sure,
it was, you know, a student app, and then it was a bundled app on the iMac, and you know, James shifted gears, and most of his living came from Drag Thing, and then he worked at Apple, and then he left Apple. And then the iPhone came out, and it really kind of put, you know, Drag Thing was still kind of kicking around, but the iPhone really brought P-Calc back to the fore for James. And so, like, the story of P-Calc is funny because that's the only way we had Rich on MacBreak Weekly this week, Rich Siegel from Bare Bones, and similar story with BB Edit, right? A piece of software doesn't continue to exist for 30 years. In a steady state where it's just always the same, right? There's too much change happening around it. And so in the case of P-Calc, it became, you know, less important, and then it became more important. And that moment where I remember seeing P-Calc running on an iPhone for the first time, and it was like, oh, this piece of software now has a physical component. I'm holding a calculator in my hand when that app is launched. And that was transformative, and P-Calc became a very successful iOS app. And then, you know, and then the story later on is that James needed to amuse himself and made an about box that was a video game, and then made a dice rolling app and all of those other things. But and ironically, Drag Thing, the thing that was kind of like his main thing for the longest time, PCalc is so successful, and Drag Thing was based on older technology that was going to require him to essentially rewrite it, and he made the decision to not and just let it die, which says something about PCalc as well, right? But that, if you would ask me that question, I always had thought of James as the Drag Thing guy, because PCalc was this kind of oddity that wasn't really his focus, and then it, you know, but it became that again because 30 years is a long time.
Yeah, exactly. Stuff comes in and goes out again. I mean, I would argue the story of the Mac is similar in some ways, right? I mean, there have definitely been times when the Macs has ebbed or flowed depending on what's going on in the world. I mean, certainly, you know, the 90s, there was some dark times for the Mac then.
Yeah,
but even later on, I think, you know, compared when the iPod was out and the iPhone first came out and all that, like, there was a lot of questions about the Mac's continued survival and its place in Apple's lineup and all of that. And I think, you know, it has at various times been more or less successful. I think we just came out of a period basically right prior to the Apple Silicon transition where people were like getting a little disenchanted with some of the choices that had been made. And the Apple Silicon transition really, I think, turned things around. And it's been arguably more successful. I mean, not arguably, financially at least, more successful than it's ever been.
Right.
Which is a testament, again, to something that has gone in and out in over the last 40, almost 40 years.
Well, and in a similar story to PCalc, I would say the fact that the Mac, you know, became more relevant in a way because of its this other kind of product that spun out of the Mac and then became, in this case, way more successful than the Mac. But all of the effort that went into the things like developing Apple's own chips then comes and feeds back into the Mac and leads the Mac to a new level of success. That's it's 30 years is a long time. There are a lot of I have a Hawaiian shirt, an Aloha shirt in my closet that is from MetroWorks. And it's got the MetroWorks guy and it's a Code Warrior. So she says
to me, I was going
to
say,
she says to me, "What is this?" I said, "Oh boy." I said, "I got that during the PowerPC transition," and I had to stop and I said, "Okay, Jamie, remember when Apple went from Intel processors to the new Apple Silicon?" I said, "Well, when they went to Intel, it was from PowerPC, and this shirt is from when they went to PowerPC from 68,000. Right. God. And then I turned to dust and blew away on the wind.
Yeah,
because it's like how many transitions? That shirt is from the first Mac chip transition, and there have been several since then, not to mention the software transition. I think it's funny that James is we've also reached 30 years of System 7, basically, because James's post on Infomac for Drag Thing 1 basically says this runs on System 7. And then in a very James layer of humor says, "For those of you still running System 6, here are all the features you're missing," and then lists the features of the app. And that's pretty good.
System 7 was where I started. My first Mac came with it. And in fact, that Mac did not have enough RAM to run it, so I had to downgrade it to 6.0.7 until I could buy more RAM and upgrade it to System 7. But yeah, I mean, it shows you the point that all the processor transitions, right? I mean, it's the computer of Theseus, right? Like,
yeah,
it's still a Mac somehow, but it's
got
all the parts
bar.
Are different. And yeah, exactly.
Got an apple in the corner.
I mean, adapt or die, I guess, is the lesson that we can learn from that. You can survive that long. It's just you gotta roll with the punches.
At the end of his piece, James basically says, "I realize that I'm just going to keep rewriting PCalc until I'm done being a developer." And there's a real truth to that, right? And that was something that Rich brought up briefly on MacBreak Weekly. It's like, you know, when BBEdit started, it was I believe Pascal and it ran on System 6 or, you know, pre-System 7. And, you know, then he had to go through all those transitions. I think the only reason BBEdit has survived is that Rich and company have been really careful about those steps they make. They're kind of contrasting with James in the sense that James, as an indie developer with a with an app or two apps, gets to like keep himself intellectually stimulated by trying new Apple technology. I think Bare Bones is almost the reverse of that, which is they have this very complex app being written by not that many people, and they're very hesitant to rush in and embrace something that's new because that's time they can't spend on something else. And so the example that I gave is they had to change the text editing engine this summer, and they were using a very old text editing API that, as Rich said on MacBreak Weekly, they only started using because somebody from Apple came to them and said, you can't use that other API anymore. So they switched to this one. But Ventura beta's come out and it's like, oh, you like I would type into BB Edit and then stop and watch as the characters caught up with me. Like it was not
right. Yeah.
It couldn't, my supercomputer couldn't keep up with my typing anymore. And they realized, they're like, okay, yes, this is it. And so, and I think that's really interesting. So they're on the opposite end where it's like the reason BB Edit survives is that it does adapt. But what they do is they get to try to get the timing right, which is like, we will change when we need to. And so, yes, BB Edit is now, cocoa and not carbon. Yeah. And, right. And it's Apple Silicon and not Intel and not PowerPC and not 68K. Like they will do those things as they need to. It's developed in Xcode, even, not in Code Warrior, because you have to develop it in Xcode and that's where it has to be. It has adapted and changed and is the program of Theseus, to your point. Leo asked Rich if there was any Swift in it. And Rich was like, I think there's like one thing that has some Swift in it somewhere, but he couldn't remember where. And I thought, well, that says it all, right? Like when it needs to have Swift in it, it will. And if you look out 5 years, how does BB Edit survive 5 more years if they have to do half the app in Swift? They will, because that's where they'll go. And James saying, I'll just keep rewriting pCalc and whatever I need to write it in. Yeah, I mean, basically that's how you do survive, is that it's called the same thing, but it's really been a bunch of different things in its life, which, is true of all of us, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that's true. We gotta keep doing our stuff.
We gotta
find new ways to do it.
We're not the same people we were in the past. We just keep on moving on.
True, that's true.
Can you tell me what happened with Apple's home architecture?
I wish I could. this is the thing that they talked about in when they announced iOS 16 back at WWDC, and it was kind of buried, I think, a little bit. I'm not sure it was actually discussed even. It didn't get more than a sentence maybe during the keynote, but it was in the list of features, which is, in addition to bringing in support for Matter, what we're going to do is re-architecture the entire stuff like that's underlying the Home app to make stuff more reliable. And everybody who's ever used the Home app said, great, because it is unreliable. And so that was one of the features that rolled out when Apple released 16.2 and Ventura 13.1 a couple weeks ago. And it required you to update all of your devices on your network to the newer version. I mean, you could update the home architecture without that. It's just those devices could no longer control things in your home. So clearly it's a pretty substantial rewrite. But as of yesterday, and I haven't checked to see today or not, but as of yesterday, it was removed. The option to upgrade your home architecture was removed from the home app. And nobody really knows why. So I did reach out to Apple. I have not heard anything back from them. In journalist speak, they did not respond to a request for comment.
Thank you.
There did sound like basically like anecdotally that there were a lot of issues with this transition. People were having problems with it. And I know some people said it went fine for them, but it does seem like maybe those problems are widespread enough that it's, something that needed to go back to the drawing board a bit. And I don't know exactly what the long and short of that's going to be. I think it looks like as of this morning, or I guess yesterday afternoon, they published a support document for those who are having trouble once they have upgraded. I don't know what that tells you. But, it includes problems with devices stuck in updating or configuring mode, missing devices, HomeKit secure video not working, invitations to share the home with other users failing, those are all things that are problems. And it seems like the latter is the one, the invitation issue is the one that this is addressing. But it does seem, and I'm learning now because I haven't had a chance to look this morning. This just in, their support document says, we temporarily removed the option to upgrade to the new Homer texture. This option to upgrade will return soon. If you already upgraded, you are unaffected by this change, which is kind of a no-brainer, but sure. Anyways, yeah. I'm fascinated by this because Home has been a mixed bag. I had an issue even before upgrading where the other day, all of a sudden, I can't remember what I changed. It was like, I think it was the issue with, and I've written about this before on Six Colors, you can't pick a Home hub. The network magically decides which device should be your current home hub, and it's supposed to prioritize stuff like Wi-Fi connection, Bluetooth connection, etc. I have run into situations, which I know others have as well, where every single home hub in our home lists itself as on standby, which is seems like it's not useful,
right?
And I ran into that problem, and I couldn't get any of my Cassata lights to work, which surprised me because the Lutron lights have been rock solid,
yeah.
And they work fine if you use the switches, which is great. I mean, that's the reason to have the Lutron lights is that you can still turn your lights on and off. It's just Siri couldn't address them. I couldn't turn them on or off from the Home app. And I tried a bunch of stuff and eventually just gave up and unplugged the Lutron bridge and plugged it back in again. And that fixed it.
I've never done that. I've never had to do that.
That was the first time I've ever done it. And I was kind of baffled as to what had happened. But I did notice in the middle of that I had problems with it and trying to pick. It wants to pick my original HomePods, which are in my office, as the hub sometimes. And those are, A, older. B, they don't have Thread. C, they're farther away from a lot of the stuff.
Yeah.
So I always am perplexed as to why it's doing that. And I have high hopes for this architecture that it might actually improve the reliability, but it seems as though, based on everything I've heard, it's not an unequivocal fix for the problems that people have had.
It feels like we're essentially resetting the clock to 1.0, but at least everybody's on the same page now, if that makes sense, right? Like, we're all like, okay, we're going to do Matter. Okay, everybody ready. And that's great, but it's also like not, it's new and feels very 1.0 to me.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's frustrating at times because the Home app has been around for a long time. And it feels as though this is something that Apple should have nailed down a bit more. And it's you know, especially now, I mean, I can understand feeling like Matter's on the horizon and we're going to devote a lot of time to that. But even so, I mean, I don't know. You like me, have used the Home app for a long time. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you have seen the, you know, device not responding or having Siri and it just like, hold on a second, something went wrong, you know, and like there's nothing more frustrating. It's like all I asked you to do was turn on some lights.
Turn on the lights, yeah.
And you sat there and you chugged for a while. And it's like if you can't even make that work smoothly. Well, it's very hard to get anybody who is not technically, I don't want to say savvy, technologically patient, which, you know, many of us being technological enthusiasts are like, yeah, we're willing to take a little bit of friction on understanding computers are complicated, stuff happens, sometimes things break. But you try to get anybody who is not somebody accustomed to dealing with that to use smart home tech where that happens. And they're like, why didn't I just walk over and turn on the lights? And it's like, it's hard to say you're wrong. I mean,
I know I wanted to shout at my lights instead.
Yeah, that's I just want to get angry. That's the thing I want to do. Yeah.
Let it out. Yeah, yeah. It can be opaque. And like, this is the story of a lot of Apple stuff, which is they're trying to protect people from the technology. But the problem is that makes it opaque. And there are certain circumstances where the opacity, it just becomes frustrating because you don't know what's going on. I mentioned this on a podcast this week. Was it Connected, maybe? I don't know. I was on a lot of weird podcasts this week. This is just the latest one of those. I bought a new weather station base, which is this Weatherlink Live thing that is, I told this story somewhere. It might have even been here. Like, it's a modern way to talk to the weather station in my backyard instead of the old way, which is sort of adapted from back when it was a serial connection, but then they did an Ethernet thing that you could attach instead. And okay. And I thought that the Ethernet thing was dying because twice, including when I was actually visiting you in Boston, it has basically died and I got no weather data for like 2 days. And I came home and I unplugged it and replugged it and power cycled it. And then it came back eventually, but then it was kind of like finicky. It was going on and off. And then, so all of this has happened. I'm like, okay, this thing is dying. Cause it's not like a one-time kind of, first off, it was working fine forever. And then I had that one time where I had to reset it. And then it kept on losing the connection. And yet since the last time I did it, while it's sitting next to the new piece of hardware, so maybe it's intimidated. It's like, oh crap, they're gonna get rid of me. It's worked fine. Like I didn't need to get the replacement for it. And I'm starting to think that it was literally just a weird lingering effect of that one network failure I had that I couldn't see, was completely invisible, but that some devices somewhere on my network were still sort of holding on to their old DHCP assignment or whatever, even though it was assigned to a static IP address. And again, this level of networking, nobody should deal with it. But this is the thing when we talk about the resilience and why they want to do so much stuff device to device. It's because like nobody wants to manage an IP network in their house, but they've got them. And they're not always very reliable, depending on your routers, depending on the topology of your network. And nobody should care about network topology in their house, right? On principle, right? So now I don't know. I'm really kind of wondering if there was just something weird going on the hub, you know, the bridge back there where it was confused. I don't even know. It's so strange. And this is the problem with the home tech stuff. And I know that Thread is meant to actually address some of this stuff, but boy.
But I mean, and that even that is it's a partial solution because Thread devices will for the foreseeable future have to coexist with non-Thread devices.
Yeah.
Because people aren't going to go out and replace all their devices with Thread devices. Tempting as it might be. So you got to still design around the assumption that the old devices will still be in use. And now you have this mishmash of stuff, which is just going to make everything more complex. But
yeah,
I don't know. I mean, and maybe the answer is this new home architecture, you know, they'll iron out these wrinkles and, you know, in 6 months, everything will be much better than it was before. But it seems for sure, no matter what, there's going to be some pain along the way.
For sure.
And we have no way of knowing, but, you know, got to cross your fingers and keep moving forward, I guess. But I had this issue the other day, actually, with got our tree, our Christmas tree in, and we decorated it and put the lights on and everything. And usually I put it on a smart switch because it's like, you know, I can turn it on, I can schedule it, etc. Great. And I went looking for like smart switches, and I have like a box of smart switches that I've acquired over the years. And I ran into this problem where it's like, oh, I have these TP-Link Casa ones I bought for a while, but I've stopped my my Homebridge thing wasn't working because I stopped using it mostly. And then I pulled out a Wemo one that's like I have a Wemo one that doesn't support HomeKit. Mm-hmm. And then I have a Wemo one that does support HomeKit, but is totally broken and I could not get to work. And so I was like, you know what? I'm just plugging it in on the foot switch that I've got there and ordering a couple Miros plugs because I know those work and they're HomeKit and they're straightforward and they're like $10 for a couple. So I was like, that's what I did. I was like, I'm going to wait 2 days. Amazon will deliver me a new smart switch. And I'll solve the problem. But now I've got like two more, right? I've got a whole box of these things. And, you know, it's just points out how clumsy and patchwork this system has been. All IoT smart home stuff over the last 7 or 8 years. Like it's moving quickly, but it also is the canonical move fast and break things, it feels like.
Yeah, you know which switch you should have used there, though, right? You should have gone the Wemo way. The Weem away, the Weem away, the Weem away, the Weem away. In the home bridge, the mighty home bridge, the smart switch sleeps tonight. That's all I got. I think about that every time I look at one of my Wemo switches. It's like, Wemo.
Yeah, for a while, I'd given my parents my original Wemo smart switch, which is huge.
Yeah, I have one of those. Yep.
And I had given it to them because they had one of the old mechanical timers on the light in their living room for basically since I was a kid. And it's gone, you know, they've replaced it a couple times, but it's one of those ones with the giant dial and you have to like click in little pins and everything.
Yeah, my mom has one of those. I was setting it yesterday. Yeah.
Oh my God. They're so bad because every time daylight savings changes, it's like, oh, I got to redo this.
And if you're close to it,
it drifts.
And if you're close to it, it ticks.
Yeah. Yep. I remember. It's the sound of my childhood.
I had first heater that didn't have a timer on it for my office. I put one of those on it. It had one on it. It was actually physically on it. It did have a timer, but it was one of those timers. And I had to get rid of that heater because I couldn't stand the ticking, Dan, the ticking.
Yeah. Oh, the incessant ticking. Yeah. But I replaced it with the original one. And then that one finally broke down a couple weeks ago. And so
R.I.P.
I was like, I tried to go in and fix it and whatever in the app. And I was like, this is not happening. You know what? I'm just going to bring you one of these Miros ones I have, set it up in HomeKit, and you're done. So much easier. So when it works nice. Yeah.
Well,
but,
one of the nice things about some of these HomeKit smart switches is that they also have their own app that lets you do scheduling in the app on the device. So you don't have to rely on a HomeKit hub somewhere to run its automation and tell it to turn on. You can just say, look, switch, just turn on at this time. And then the switch is like, all right, boss. You're like, good, okay, we're done here.
Well, and isn't like the matter is supposed to kind of, I think, make that more universal, and not require hubs for everything, because which is great. But I like, because the nice thing about HomeKit is like, when you get something like one of those Miros switches, you don't even have to download the app, right? Like, you can just go into HomeKit and set it up. And that's great, but it does have that shortcoming of like, okay, but now you need a hub if you need to run automations, and like, do you have an Apple TV? Do you have a HomePod? Do you like that? Right. Those are your options. So,
That's not so great. All right. Well, I think we have come to the end of the podcast for this year. But, you know, it's actually just a week off. And then next year we'll be back on January 6th with more, because there'll probably be more, right? Or there'll be more, or we'll talk about our favorite books of the year. One of those.
Oh, there we go. There's some options.
Movies, TV shows. I got a long list of TV shows.
Yeah,
it's a good year for TV shows, I think.
It was a good year for TV shows.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you're looking for a last-minute gift for somebody, Dan's books are available as ebooks. They ship them instantly.
Instantly. Mm-hmm. So there you go. You still can get them by Christmas.
Yeah, that's true. They're right out there. All right. Well, thanks to everybody out there. Happy holidays, whatever holidays you're celebrating. Happy New Year. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks. But until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.